Trying to determine the impacts of climate change is a difficult task. There are hundreds of different factors which could determine how communities are influenced. To more effectively understand the challenges associated with climate change, scientists are using a system of system dynamics models. Laura Schmidt Olabisi is an ecologist and modeler here at Michigan State University. She spoke with current state's Emmanuelle Berry about her latest project, which explores how higher temperatures could impact Detroit. Olabisi says there are three major hurdles in determining the effects of climate change.
I would say that there are three major challenges with this. One is the high level of uncertainty associated with how climate change is going to impact communities. And that's not only the uncertainty of how the climate will change, but also uncertainty about how people are going to react to it, the decisions people are going to make in the future. People are highly unpredictable. Another aspect is that makes it difficult is the fact that the effects of climate change and the decisions that people make around it are often removed in time and space from where the impacts of those decisions occur. So you might decide to do something now that will have consequences decades into the future or hundreds of miles downstream. And so we need ways of thinking about that in the whole context. And then the third thing is that there are so many different interests and perspectives involved in a lot of these decisions that we make in terms of adapting to climate change. So people have different perspectives, and those perspectives need to be considered.
So to try and make sense, essentially, of all of these different facets, you work with what's called system dynamics models, or system dynamic modeling. Mm-hmm. Explain exactly what that is. Give us the broken down version.
Sure. So system dynamics modeling is a technique that's been around for several decades now. It began around the 1960s, a gentleman named Jay Forrester working at MIT. And it's been applied in environmental fields more recently. And applied to participatory modeling, which is what I do in terms of building models with people who are not modelers or often not even scientists. And it's a type of modeling you can do on the computer, and it has a kind of symbolic language, so people are able to see how the model is constructed and how the different pieces relate to one another. And it helps you to see how a system behaves over time. In response to different decisions that you might make or different things that might happen. So you can see those dynamics, hence the name, play mm-hmm. out over time.
So you created a model to address the impact of a heat wave in the city of Detroit or increased heat. So what went into building this model and running these simulations? As you said, it's a participatory model, so you're asking people who aren't scientists to kind of contribute. How does that work?
Mm-hmm. Well, we first thought of the idea for this in collaboration with the Michigan Department of Community Health. They are very concerned about the issue of extreme heat in Michigan because it does affect a lot of people's health. And in the United States overall, extreme heat kills more people per year than, I think it's earthquakes, floods, and tornadoes combined. So it's a pretty extreme problem.
A natural disaster.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, and you don't hear a lot about it because often the people who are affected are elderly and poor, and many live in the urban areas. So we decided to interview some people who had knowledge of this, the effects of extreme heat in Michigan. So we interviewed county health officials, we interviewed some emergency management people, planners, I think one medical examiner, and we had them just talk about how extreme heat plays out and how it affects people's health. And we used those conversations and the things that they mentioned to actually build the model. So it's taking their knowledge and putting it into this framework in order to bring it back then to a larger group of people to help look at different decisions they might make to reduce deaths and hospitalizations during an extreme heat event.
So when you interviewed these various community stakeholders, I guess what were some of their thoughts or concerns that they presented?
Well, they had a lot of different perspectives and ideas around, for example, the best way to prevent people's health from being impacted. So we talked a lot about cooling centers. One thing that several people had observed is that you can open a cooling center, which is a place with air conditioning mm-hmm. that people can go to during an extreme event if they don't have air conditioning. But oftentimes people don't actually go, and there was some confusion about why that is. So one of the things this revealed to us is how important people's behavior is during heat events. And that's something that hasn't been looked at a lot yet, because what people choose to do in terms of their behavior can drastically affect their health outcomes. So do they know or are they able to turn on the air conditioner or go to a cooling center? So these are some of the things we explored in the model.
So people are just sort of, they're unaware of the fact that they're even being impacted in a way?
Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes they're not aware that they're in a vulnerable category, even if they are. They may not be aware of the effects that certain medications may have on increasing their risk in terms of exposure to heat, for example. But also they may not choose to go to a cooling center for other reasons, because they can't get there, or they don't think that it's something that they want to do in terms of leaving their house and going to a new place. So we explored all of those dynamics in the model and looked at, you know, what might be the most significant things that affect people's health outcomes during a heat event.
Well, what are some other significant findings after running this model?
Well, We did actually zero in on the fact that people's behavior is extremely important and really needs to be looked into more. And so one of the outcomes was the realization that putting in more cooling centers on its own is not going to help during an extreme heat event unless people know that they should go to them and feel comfortable going to them. So that was one kind of outcome. We also looked at the potential impact of a brownout during a heat event and found that that was pretty significant, because obviously that shuts off people's air conditioning. Mm-hmm. And that's challenging, because when temperatures are very hot, people use electricity more to run their air conditioners, for example, and that can increase the potential of a brownout. So this is kind of an example of what we call feedback loop in systems, that one thing leads to another, which then leads back to impact the first thing.
So you mentioned there that you tested a brownout. So there's different scenarios, essentially, that you can test within this same model then.
Yeah, and it was actually kind of fun. So during the workshop that we held in Detroit, this is May of 2012 now, we had different small groups at each table that had a copy of the model and a modeler helping to explain things to them. And they could choose scenarios to run in the model and choose to kind of play with it, almost like a video game. And so I think they actually enjoyed it and had a lot of fun with that.
How will these findings be considered or possibly look to when people are implementing community plans?
Well, we're still working with the Department of Community Health on that. This is something that they want to follow up on and continue to explore across the state. And we're actually applying for more funding to expand the model beyond just Detroit and hopefully to other cities in Michigan and in the Midwest.
As you said, there's a lot of different stakeholders when it comes to addressing even just the simple problem of dealing with increased heat. And then you take that even further, and there's a bunch of different stakeholders and opinions when addressing climate mm-hmm. change in general. How do you think that models help kind of generate a dialogue between all these different groups with all these different thoughts?
Mm-hmm. I think that one of the main ways they do that is that a model forces you to put all of your assumptions about the way a system works out there very explicitly, and even to test them. So it helps, because sometimes when people are fighting about an issue or have different perspectives on an issue, they're actually operating from different assumptions. Mm-hmm. And if you get back to those root assumptions, you can really tackle, you know, the root cause of a disagreement or find common ground, actually. And so that's one thing that I think models are very helpful for. Another thing is that sometimes and this happens for all of us, sometimes our perceptions about the way a system works are wrong, and sometimes we need to test that by looking at how different things play out over time using a model. And sometimes we can find out that maybe our hoped for outcome is never going to happen because mm-hmm. it's physically impossible, for example. So I've used models in that way as well.
So if people wanted to find out more about this information, where can they go?
Well, this work was funded through the Great Lakes Integrated Sciences and Assessment Center, or GLISA, which is jointly operated between the University of Michigan and Michigan State. And there's a report online about this work that's available through the GLISA website, GLISA.org.
Laura Schmidt-Olbisi is a Michigan State University systems ecologist and system dynamics modeler. Laura, thanks for your time.
Thank you very much, Emmanuel.